The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org. Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. I'm Andy Cahan, Director of Author Events. I am very excited to have Youssef Komunyakaa with us this evening. His latest book, Everyday Mojo Songs of Earth, New and Selected Poems, 2001 through 2021, was due to be released this month, but the publication is moved to the middle of June, and yet he still graciously agreed to join us. Please show your appreciation by pre-ordering a copy of the book. I will post a link in the chat to the bookstore later in the evening. I expect all of you are here tonight by choice, not chance, and that you have some sense of the remarkable arc of Mr. Komunyakaa's career. From his early works, including Copacetic and Dien Kai Dao, through his Pulitzer Prize winning Neon Vernacular, on to Talking Dirty to the Gods, War Horses, and The Emperor of Water Clocks, along with his plays, performance art, and librettos. He has been called legendary, his works monumental. Youssef Komunyakaa, thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you. The first poem I'm going to read is Several Mysteries of the Platypus. It's from a chapbook titled Night Animals and has artwork by Philly artist, Rachel Bliss. She tries to hide in a swish of wet grass because she remembers the first man like a wound, an old scar, a howl and a hush. Her skin is too tough for the marketplace. Otherwise, she would have fallen under a bullet or knife. She came from an old world, a prototype, the first chimera, pieced together by a prankish god. That first moment of light seeping from the cave, an oath written on her back by the edge of a flood. Before she slipped from the egg, she knew a human face would make her heart explode into a clutch of stars. And the second poem from this chapbook is titled Night of the Armadillo. You huddle into a shell, a breastplate, a whisper in the dark, summon your canned one by one along the frontier. In your kingdom, errant night of undergrowth, even in your gut fear, you are always on the verge of a new border or at the edge before crossing into the interior of false prophecies. Desert blooms, a bird, a bearers fall into marshy hush around a sharp curve. Planetary lights sprang out of nothingness. How did you go wrong? With only blind faith and a dead star left in your eyes, where's North America? You've been around eons, not knowing when You left one age and entered another. But I found your Olympus of foolish odds in the modern world. Lovers in cars, delivery trucks, make the leaves tremble along the roadside. If you know this, little suitcase of guts and nails, you are still alive, even with your broken hinges. And the third poem, the last poem from the chapbook I'm going to read tonight is Another Kind of Night. I like to think that there's a playful but serious definition under each of these poems that are tributes to animals. Slowly, the remembered trees, a 900-year-old sky, the call of birds, a mammoth snake snoozing beside a stone, a mast tall as a man, an hour after sunset, jackals holding a ceremony at the edge of a lake. It all fades into rancor, but my own face is still the boy's losing its features down there where everything is one God-forsaken animal wounded in the nameless dark. All the faces are one consolation where the dead interrogate the living. The motion of the sea beneath, God of moonlight, God of sharks patrolling the schooner, and God of laughter on the deck. Hyenas on a hilltop, are you still trying to tell me something about mercy? In this other night, riding the trade winds, the waves underneath a creaking eternity, we are nothing but cargo, moans in the belly of a rifen, leviathan, wind toss, the sails toned down to tatters, beached up on white sand stretching out against sky for centuries. Seagulls calling to birth cries in the new world. Now I'll switch over and read some poems from the new collection, forthcoming collection, Everyday Mojo Songs of Earth. I start with the very first poem in the collection, A World of Daughters. Say, lick clean at birth, say, weeping in the tall grass where this tantalizing song begins. Birds perch on a crooked branch over a grave of an unending track into the valley of cooling waters. Lessons of earth, all questions on more of the first tongue say, I have gone back, says the oracle, counting seasons and centuries, undoing fault lines between one generation and next, as she twirls sackcloth edge with pollen, and one glimpses what one did not know. Say, this is where the goat was asked to speak. Legends ago, to kneel and deliver a sacrifice. To feel a truth depends on how and why the singer's song fits into the mouth. Well, I believe the borrowed rib story is the other way round, entangled in decree, blessing, law, and myth. One only has to listen to night-long pleas of a mother who used all thousand chants and prayers of clay, red ochre, blown from the mouth upon the high stone wall, retracing a final land bridge to wishbones. My own two daughters and granddaughter, the three know how to work praise and lament, ready to sprout wings of naked flight and labor. Yes, hinge into earth. We rose from Lucy to clan, from clan to tribe. And today we worship her sun polished bones, remembering she is made of questions. No, mama is not always a first word before counting eggs in the cowbird's nest. It begins in memory. Now, say her name, Sidinkish, mother of us all. The next poem is titled "Other Side of the Creek." We pile planks, sheets of tan, and sandbags across the creek till the bright water rose and splayed both sides, swelling into our hurrah. Our hard work brought July thrashes and fat June bugs in decades of dead leaves, water moccasins hid in holes at the brim of the clay bank as the creek eased up pivot bones, hips, navel, and chest to eye level. When the boys dove into our swim hole, we pumped our bald fists to fire up their rebel yells. The Jim Crow birds sang of a salmon in Mayhaw after a 12-gauge shotgun sound in the mossy woods. If we ruled the day, an hour, the boys would call girl cousins and sisters, and they came running half naked into a white splash, but we could outrun the sunset through sage and rabbit tobacco, born to hide each other's alibis beneath the drowned sky. Okay, the next poem is titled "The Camelite Lounge." I've been reading from this new book, from the new section of poems, new poems, the Carmelite Lounge. The Carmelite Lounge. All the little doors unlock in the brain as the saxophone nudges the organ and trap drums to an echo of the great migration tiptoes up and down the baseline. Faces in semi-dark cluster around a solo, edging towards a town of steel and car lines driven by conveyor belts. But now only a sign stutters across the Delaware sand. Trenton makes the world takes. With one eye on the players at the candlelight and the other on televised Olympians, home is a Saturday afternoon around the kidney-shaped bar. These songs run along dirt roads and highways, crisscross lonely seas and scale mountains, traverse skies and underworlds of neon honky-tonk, wherever blues dare to travel. A swimmer climbs a diving board in Beijing, does a springy toe dance on the edge, turns her head towards us, and seems to say, "Okay, you guys, now see if you can play this." She executes a backflip, a triple span, a half twist, held between now and then, and jackknives through the water. And it is what pours out of the horn. Next poem is titled, "The Body Remembers." I stood on one foot for 3 minutes and didn't tilt the scales. Do you remember how quickly we scrambled up an oak, leaning out over the creek? How easy to trust the water to break of our glorious leaps. The body remembers every wish one lives for, or doesn't, or even horror. Our dance was a rally in sunny leaves. Then quick as anything, Janet Dixon was up, opening his wide arms in the tallest oak, weaving to the sky into the flick of an eye. He was a buffalo fish gig, pleading for help, voiceless, bigger and stronger. He knew every turn in the creek past his back door, but now he was cooing like a brown dove in a trap of twigs, a water-honed spear of kindling jutted up as if it were the point of our folly and humbug on a Sunday afternoon, right? 5 of us carried him home through the thicket, our feet running, our feet cutting a new path, running in sleep years later. We were young as condom balloons, flowering crabapple trees to double bloom, and had a world of baleful hope and breath. Does Johnny run fingers over the thick web on his belly? Days we were still invincible. Sometimes I spend half a day feeling for bones, humming a half-forgotten ballad on a park bench a long ways from home. The body remembers the berry bushes, heavy with sweetness, shivering in a lonely woods. But I doubt it knows words live longer than clay and spit of flesh. As rock bottom love, is it easier to remember pleasure? Or does hurt ease true as hunger? Our summer rocking back and forth, uprooting what's to come, the shadow of the tree weighed as much as a man. Grenade. I would like to say that this poem actually is dedicated to the 14 young Black men soldiers who threw themselves on grenades in Vietnam. There's no rehearsal to turn flesh into dust so quickly. A hair trigger, a cocked hammer in the brain, a split second between man and infamy. It lands on the ground. A few soldiers duck, and the others are caught in a half run, and one throws himself down on the grenade. All the watches stop, a flash, smoke, silence. The sound fills the whole day, flesh and earth fall into the eyes and mouths of the men, a dream trapped in midair. They touch their legs, arms, their groins, ears and noses, saying, "What happened?" Some are crying, others are laughing. Some are almost dancing. Someone tries to put the dead man back together. He just dove on the damn thing, sir. A flash, smoke, silence, the day blown apart. For those who can walk away, what is their burden? Shreds of flesh and bloody rags, gathered up and stuffed into a bag. Each breath belongs to him, each song, each curse, every prayer is his. Your body doesn't belong to your mind and soul. Who are you? Do you remember the man left in the jungle? The others who owe their lives to this phantom, do they feel like you? Would his loved ones remember him if that little park or statue erected in his name didn't exist? And does it enlarge their lives? You wish he'd lie down in that closed coffin and not wander the streets or enter your bedroom at midnight, the woman you love should never understand. Who would? You remember what he used to say. If you give a kite too much strain, it'll break free. That unselfish certainty. But you can't remember when you began to live his unspoken dreams. Turner's great tussle with water. As you can see, he first mastered light and shadow. Faces moving between grass and stone. The beasts wading to the ark, and then the decline of the Carthaginian Empire before capturing volcanic reds. But one day, while walking in windy rain along the Thames, he felt he was descending a hemp ladder into the galley of a ship, down in the swollen belly of the beast with a curse hook and a bell and bucket, and to whimper and howl and to piss and shit. He saw winds hurl sails and mast pole as the crewmen wrestled slaves dead and half dead into a darkened whirlpool. There it was, groaning. Then the water was stabbed and brushed till the luminous and the bloodish sharks were on their way. But you're right. Yes, there's still light crossing the divide, seeping around corners of the thick golden frame. Now I just read a couple last poems. Ode to the Oud. Gourd-shaped muse, swollen with wind in the mulberry. Tell me everything you're made of, little desert boat of Ra. Oblong box of bed and doves, pecking pomegranate seeds out of the air. You're the poet's persona, his double in the high priest's third chamber. Each strain a litany of stars over the Sahara. Pear-shaped traveler, strong but so light. Is there a wishbone holding you together? I wish I knew how to open you up with an eagle's feather or a pick whittle from buffalo horn, singing alive the dust of Nubia. Rosewood season long ago, I wish I could close your 12 mouths with kisses. Tongues strung in a row, I wish I could open every sound in you. I envy one blessed to master himself by rocking you in his lonely arms, little ship of sorrow, bend your voice till the names of heroes and courtesans, birds and animals prayers and love songs swum from your belly. Okay, let me see. Okay, just two last poems. Timbuktu. I sing an elegy from the city of 333 saints for every crumbling mosque and minaret, for the libraries standing for centuries against dust storms, for the nomads herding trees of life across the desert, along trails where camels haul salt, to rafts swollen on the river Niger, before the empire of Sunday fell, the griots speak of an epic memory of stardust and sand, but now mercenaries kidnap, run drugs, and kill in bold daylight. Blood, money brought them into Libya, and more blood money took them home, brandishing stolen guns and grenades. When Lord Byron speaks in Don Juan, where geography finds no one to oblige her, I hear my name. But no one stands up to prophecies the other side of limbo against the modern, as a metallic eye drones overhead. Medieval clouds may promise safe passes or escape routes out of Mali, but the God-fearing cannot remember the faces of death after kicking in all the drums. I think I'll let that be the last poem. Thank you.
Terrific reading, Youssef. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Listening to you read from this collection, I wonder how you chose the poems for the book. Is each section supposed to be representative of that book, say War Horses, or is there an arc you're affecting per section, i.e. by choosing from War Horses? And does that apply to the shape of the book as a whole?
Well, historically, for myself as such, I have chosen poems that reside, live beside other poems. Sometimes it's tonally, sometimes it is subject matter, and other times it's just phrases that relate to each other, that establish a feeling, a place, a moment.
When you read a poem aloud, are you inside it? And by that, I mean, are you thinking and feeling it as you're reading it, or is it just words?
I think I feel it. One reason is because I have said a number of places that languages are the first music. So there is a kind of singing inside the psyche. So yes, I feel it.
Okay. I was wondering also, because I was reading along with you and I noticed you were changing some of the words, and I thought it might be intentional. And I thought, yeah, I have to check the, I've got the galley. I'll have to check the final edition when it comes out. like the difference between speaks and intones when you're talking about Lord Byron.
Yes, yes.
Will speak be in the published book and intone stay in the galley?
Intones, I think, yes.
Okay.
And sometimes what happens in composing poems, often I remember the very first take, let's say that way, the very first, how the poem exists on the page. And then I have, I also revise. So I remember the first take without remembering the revision sometimes. This is in the psyche that way as well.
Yeah. Inadvertent improv, perhaps?
right, yes.
You know, I was reading through your book, Blue Notes, and very much enjoying it. And in one of the essays you write, "I like the implied freedom jazz brings to my work. A soloist can go to hell or to heaven and back, bending a tune into an extended possibility." And then you write, "Jazz has been the one thing that gives symmetry, shape, and tonal equilibrium to my poetry." My question is, how do you balance extended possibility and symmetry to make sense?
Well, I like the idea that at one end of the spectrum is symmetry, and at the other end of the spectrum is possibility. And the human voice, the psyche, are able to create the bridge. Very much like often I think of musicians, that there's a structure, and at the same time, that structure is stretch, pull this way and that way, and yet it comes together with a certain kind of, not practice, tonality or spirit, but a surprise. And it makes sense because it's come from the same place in the psyche, in the spirit of the player.
It seems like you're really comfortable pushing the edge of sense and sort of challenging us to, and trusting us to follow you there and understand.
I think we have that just in us to create that bridge. Mm-hmm. Only if we go there, not in a tortured way, but in a moment of freedom.
Well, I'm happy to follow you there. A couple of other questions. When you hear your poems set to music, and I'm thinking of Testimony, for example, does it and can it change the meaning for you, what you originally wrote, when you hear it as part of a different piece?
It may extend or expand the poem, but I still hear the words as I wrote them. And thinking about the words as increments of music. I've said in a number of places that the body is a great amplifier. And I still believe that we feel the language. And I'm particularly think this is true with very young children, that they feel the music. Or maybe we lose that somewhere along the way.
Hmm. And along those lines, when you're writing a libretto or performance piece, does your style change to meet the demands of the collaboration?
Or it changes halfway. I'm willing to go halfway. I like how others who come to that collaboration present something new. I like that. I agree with it. I embrace it as such, you know. I trust it. That's the word I should use. I trust, yeah, the collaborator.
I guess you have to once you've said yes.
Yes.
This is some questions from the audience now. Was there any relief in finding a way to give shape to the experience you described from Vietnam and a way to honor the phantom, quote unquote?
Oh gosh, okay. The grenade. That poem was very difficult for me to write. One reason, and I'm still in my psyche going over, I don't know what really, such a situation cannot be rehearsed. That's what I believe. It is in the individual, but I'm still reckoning with what prepares that individual for that moment, which is a split second. I would like to think it's more than just saving Conrad's as such in that moment, but it's something that's probably been rehearsed from childhood, from about family and what have you. So writing about it brings it closer in a way. And then there are those moments of release.
I've read you said about that story about you coming down the ladder and sort of the torrent of images that were pouring out of you. I don't know if this was written at that time or not.
It was written later. I didn't know how to actually write about that experience until I realized, I said, oh, this is supposed to be a prose poem. And I wrote it as such, so that was the only way I could enter that territory.
A somewhat lighter question here. Do you remember the first record you bought? And happy birthday tomorrow, this person said. Oh.
Thank you. The first record I bought, I would like to say that I remember buying Sam Cooke's You Send Me. And I still love You Send Me.
Sticking to it. Yeah, he crops up in a poem or two.
Yeah.
Somebody asks, this is from Walton Muyamba. Can you, Mr. Komanyaka, discuss what you've learned about the business of poetics and making music from rereading and building out this new and selected collection of poems?
I think it's an ongoing process. We have to have a certain sense of freedom or to not just lock everything down in the psyche, to be able to write a phrase and laugh aloud and say, where did that come from? And realize that it is a moment where we may accidentally create a surprise that enlightens us.
Well, here's to more surprises. The last entry here is from Tina Hallquist, who just says, thank you.
Thank you.
So thank you for sharing this evening with us tonight. I encourage everybody to go out and pre-order the book. It's a great read, wonderful selection, along with a number of new poems, some of which you heard this evening. Yusuf Komanyaka, thanks so much for sharing your evening with us.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Hopefully we'll see you again.
Yes, please.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/author-events.